Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, lending support to generations of farm families for 100 years. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit Illinois offers financial products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
From the Land to Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 11th day of May 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. We'll call this one our El Nino program. We'll explore what an El Nino is and what it means to the summer crops in the United States, corn, soybeans, and wheat, and how that transition from El Nino to La Nina and how quickly it happens makes a difference. It's likely to be a hot one, but when will it be dry? That's the important part, and Scott Irwin, Daryl Good have done some research. We'll also take up that same topic with Jerry Gulkey of the Gulkey Group out of Chicago, Illinois, and explore what happened in the commodity markets, too. Scott Harms will be here from Oakland, Illinois, and Archer Financial Services. And then as we finish up our time together, Drew Lerner will come along from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. He'll talk about the drought and the Safrinha corn crop in South America. And it all happens right here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's check the numbers in Chicago for Wednesday. May contract in the corn pit 4.5 cents lower at $3.74. July at 377.5, down 3.5, and December at 385.5, 2.25 lower. March corn down 3 cents at $3.93.75. May beans at $10.69.75, 6.25 lower. July at $10.78.25, down 5.75. November beans at $10.66, down 1.5 cents. January futures $10.63.25, down a penny and a quarter. Bean oil at $33.08, down a nickel for the day, and the bean meal at $3.64.40, up $4 even. May wheat futures soft red at $4.49.5, 2 cents lower. July at $4.59, that's the harvest month, down 2.25. The hard red July at $4.42.25, down 6 cents. In Chicago, live cattle futures finished at $122.52.5, 75 cents lower for the June. August at $118.85, down 92.5 cents. Feeder cattle for the May, $1.95 lower at $148.25 per 100 pounds. The August, down $1.72.5 at $148.60. And the lean hogs for the day, May contract up 20 at $76.90. June at $82.82.5. They're up $2.02.5. You, of course, are listening to Illinois Public Media. This is the Closing Market Report. Find us online at willag.org.
Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
Checking some of the energy markets at this time. Crude oil, June contract, $46.07 a barrel, $1.41 higher. Ethanol at $1.53 2/10 per gallon is a half cent higher. And gasoline on the RBOB, that's the wholesale price, $1.57 4/10, 8 8/10 cents higher. Diesel fuel or heating oil at $1.39 1/10, 1 nickel 3/10 cents higher. And natural gas for the day, up a penny at $2.16 8/10 cents per gallon. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at 17,673 is down about 180 points. The U.S. dollar at 93.79. That's down 0.477. And gold futures on the day at $1,277.50, up $12.70. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for this evening. In the area, a 70% chance of rainfall. It'll be showers and thunderstorms that come after 10 p.m., mostly cloudy and a low of 63 tonight on a south-southwest wind at about 9 miles an hour. And then tomorrow, 20% chance of showers and thunderstorms before 1 in the afternoon. Mostly cloudy, otherwise a high of 74 degrees on a west wind at 9 to 14, gusting to 20. On Thursday evening, partly cloudy, low of 51. On Friday, sunny skies, a high of 69 degrees, a west wind at 9 to 14. It will gust all the way to 20. And Friday night, a 50% chance of showers, mostly cloudy, and a low of 45 degrees. Saturday, sunny and 57. Sunday, sunny and 62. And Monday, partly sunny and 65 degrees. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of this half hour. We'll talk with Drew Lerner.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Wednesday afternoon. Scott Harms is here. He's with Archer Financial Services out of their Oakland, Illinois office. Good afternoon to you, Scott.
Good afternoon, Tom.
Farmers, I assume, are drowned out of the field still and maybe wandering around in your office. How are they feeling about the marketplace after yesterday's turn upward and the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate report?
Well, excited on one hand to see prices higher, but I think in a lot of cases, producers began to be a more aggressive marketers of especially soybeans as we crossed the 950 threshold and then the $10 threshold. So now they're more in a wait-and-see mode. There have been a lot of farmer sales, especially in the bean market, which certainly makes a lot of sense over the last few weeks. And now it's going to take a little bit more to make those next sales from the producers, I think, because they're looking to average up some of those lower price sales going forward. But overall, excited to see prices move higher. You're right; it's the weather down here has been less than conducive for additional planting this week. But hopefully, by the weekend, it'll dry it out enough for some guys to get going.
Would the sales have been both old and new crop, or mostly old crop?
It was mostly new crop. There were certainly some old crop. Those that were holding on to old crop sales were definitely taking advantage. I don't think there was a lot left of old crop. Most of the advisory services had people marketing, being aggressive with soybean marketing off the combine last fall, given the spread activity. And so I think most of the selling this was new crop, but they were rather aggressive.
And what do you do now? Producers thinking about how to own some of those beans back, and is there a good reason to do that?
Yeah, I think the market, today we saw some profit taking. I think the market's getting a little bit tired. Certainly the soybean market has, even though it actually closed halfway decent today, maybe it's got just a touch more life in it. But we've seen a big increase in demand expectations from the USDA. Through lower production estimates out of South America. So now the market's going to have to focus on proving that demand. And so we're going to be watching the export sales numbers with a lot more scrutiny going forward, given the increases in those demand expectations. So I think there very well could be, if we don't see fresh demand come into play, or if China would happen to sell some of their soybean reserves, I think you could see a pullback. And I think that's exactly what producers should be doing, is use a pullback into maybe the Memorial Day holiday. If the weather returns to becoming a little more favorable and we're able to get the Eastern Corn Belt planted, we should see a setback as crop conditions start to get reported, and they'll be reported probably with some pretty good numbers initially. There should be a little bit of a pullback. I think you could use that pullback as an opportunity to reestablish some kind of ownership and options, preparing for what could be a pretty volatile summer.
Was yesterday's report as bad for corn as the numbers appear to have been?
It just reiterated the fact that we have a burdensome supply of U.S. corn. I think it could change pretty quickly. We have to keep in mind that the USDA is using, at least in my opinion and many others' opinion, outdated acreage numbers. Those will certainly be adjusted downward in June, given the price appreciation to beans relative to corn, and also some of the wet conditions in the Eastern Corn Belt are getting up against planting corn. So there's definitely going to be some switch, and there's definitely going to be a reduction in that acreage number. And the yield number, I think using trend line yield at 168 is going to be difficult to achieve. So going forward, I think we're going to start to see the balance sheet tighten up just through natural, speaking. But I don't know that we need to go into new lows in corn. It's going to be one of those things where if we get move another 30 days down the road, we don't have a weather issue, maybe we make another test of the lows, but I don't see us going down and testing lows anytime soon. There's definitely a lid on the market, though, for now.
Do we have any idea at this point what the acreage switch might be in China from corn to soybeans, given the number of bushels that's likely to come into the marketplace there beginning this fall?
I haven't seen any real indications, strong indications of that yet.
Right. What else are we looking at fundamentally from your point of view? I know the South American crop has been in trouble, especially the safrinha corn in Brazil.
Yeah, I don't think we're done seeing the reductions out of the South American crop. So again, that's going to continue to tighten the world balance sheet, going to keep us on our toes. Perhaps maybe see, you know, the expectation is we're going to see greater demand going forward. But the key is going to be, you know, getting the rest of the crop in the ground. I think in general we won't have a problem with that. It will be a little slower than what producers would like, but ultimately we'll get the crop in the ground. And then we'll be watching very closely, you know, the weather pattern going forward. I think that there's plenty of forecasts out there talking about heat. I don't know that anyone's talking real aggressively about a drought condition, but if we start to see some heat conditions show up in early June, I think with, given the fact that the funds have already participated in this market, they seem to have a new appetite for commodities as an investment product. I think they're going to be there to help to, you know, support any kind of weather rally. So it could be exciting going forward from the upside standpoint. So I think producers need to be focused on reopening that upside on any kind of pullback over the next 30 days.
Hey, thanks so much. We'll talk with you again soon, I hope.
Great, Todd. Thank you.
Of course, is Scott Harms. He's with Archer Financial Services out of Oakland, Illinois. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Well, the agricultural economists here in Urbana-Champaign have gone through 56 years of weather data to see if there's any connection between the current El Nino event and trend yields for corn. The trend yield for corn has been going up 1.8 bushels per year for about 50 years, say the number crunchers from the University of Illinois. It means under normal weather conditions, with a little adjustment upward, this year's corn crop should average 166.2 bushels to the acre nationwide. The 166.2 is the norm, but it lives within a range that would be indicative of really good years, like 2004, and really bad years, like 2012, says U of I's Scott Irwin.
And now what we want to ask is, should we skew our expectation of those risks, given this outside factor that doesn't happen every year, which we call El Nino?
Illinois' research suggests the answer to this question is a qualified yes. The qualification is that the El Nino event is measured strictly as an effect of water temperature in the Pacific Ocean near the equator, and that only the most extreme of these events, those that are a full degree or more centigrade above the norm for 3 months running, would be considered strong enough to regularly have a real measurable impact on U.S. crops.
The warmest one was to date was 1997-98, and it peaked at 2.3 degrees centigrade above normal. So when we take the same period, we estimated trend yields. If you look going back to 1960, there were 11 El Nino episodes where we were at least 1 degree centigrade above normal. And this is the other key. We filtered the data so that these spikes had to occur in what we called the preseason period for corn production.
This would be from September to March prior to the crop year. It's exactly what has happened this year, and the spike is more than 2 degrees centigrade. It's a really big one.
What we find is that in these big spiking El Ninos that occur in the preseason period, that in corn, on average, you end up about 4 to 5 bushels below trend.
Having said that, Irwin points to a large range of occurrences, from 11 bushels above trend in 1992 to 23 bushels below trend in 1982. 1988 and 2012, the two worst drought years, also count under this construct. The model used very reliably predicts summer heat waves. However, it's not so great at determining the amount of rainfall. Recall the reference Irwin made to the 1997-98 preseason El Nino, the largest on record, similar to this year. Well, the national corn yield was 3 bushels to the acre above trend. The heat wave came, it was just very late in August and early September, after the corn crop had been made. We're joined now by Jerry Gulke. He's at the Gulke Group out of Chicago, Illinois, though he's in DeKalb for the afternoon near his hometown there. Jerry, thanks for being with us this afternoon. USDA released some numbers earlier in the week, and it surprised the market pretty healthily. It moved sharply higher, although I think you saw some of this coming first technically and then as you look fundamentally around the globe at the rest of the world? What did you see?
Well, I think basically if you look at it, we've been kind of touting this as a hopeful sign that, you know, this has never been a demand problem we have with the oil prices. It's been a supply problem. So you could look at it and say we grew a little bit too much in an ever-expanding global demand for both feed grains and, but especially proteins, soybeans. So we saw that for the first time, even with a good crop in Argentina or in Brazil, that we would likely grow less than what we're going to use. That did not mean we didn't have a big supply because we had U.S. supplies, South American supplies, but we were going to grow less than we were going to use. So we'd dip into the supply a little bit. And that difference, was not that great if you had a crop problem somewhere. And I think a lot of people have been focused, at least the ones I listen to and see on TV and so forth, were focused on the U.S. supply. You know, you look at 400 million, 450 million carryover, and beans in particular, that's a lot of beans relatively to what we're used to, but not relative to global demand, and it wouldn't take that much. And so here we got that much, a little bit of reduction in Argentina, 10 million metric tons at least, and more coming perhaps. That's 350 million bushels, 360, and you got a problem in Brazil. So you got, now you grew less than what you thought. So we easily took away that excess supply we had in the U.S. if they have to come to us for that demand. And demand would be as good as we thought, yet CNBC and others, all we've been hearing about is China, 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 and how that's going to hurt us. You know, they don't stop eating, and we have a big economy there that if they maintain what they were going to eat, they still have a good demand in protein. And now we're seeing year-over-year increases in protein. So the stars were lined up and the dominoes were laid for something like this to happen. And it happened. You know, we thought it would happen. I thought March or May might be our first clue. I really didn't think that it might not happen until June and we'd have weather. But here we had the USDA admitting this early that they understand what's going on in Brazil and Argentina and understand the global demand situation for proteins. A lot of cattle and meat, and a lot of meat in the United States, and still a growing demand, maybe 3 to 5% compounded annually in the world. And it set us up for one of the biggest cuts in carryover this early in the year in my memory, and maybe we've had them before, but I don't recall it. And that caught a lot of guys short who have been wanting to sell this crop every 20 cents higher, including yesterday morning when they said the government's going to cut the wings off from under you, legs off from under you, sell into this rally. And now we have, I don't think we have people that out of shorts yet, and we don't have the end user covered, not only for this year, but 2017-18 requires that we grow a lot more soybeans somewhere. And that's stuff that a lot of people are missing because it's too far out, it's blue sky. But this is a futures market, not a past market. We need to, this was good news for ag. This is really good news for agriculture.
Is moving this up in the timeline, you said you didn't expect to see it until June. Does that change the prospects going forward? And I'm really asking, will we put more bean acres in the ground in the United States? Because now we know earlier rather than later, and we will have that June 30 report, and might it reflect a larger set of bean acres?
Well, our survey showed not as many bean acres as what the government came up with. Of course, it was less. Yes, I think now you'll switch some. And I was talking with people from around the world. Suddenly, you know, people are calling and saying, well, how many more beans can we buy? And I'm saying, you know, you waited too long. You suckered the farmer in too long with these low prices. And I said, now you can't plant beans on what's already been spread in fertilizer. And, you know, we probably, I would say that we have 85 to 90% of the intended corn acres already have fertilizer on it. Maybe it's too wet. But we have 10% left that's going to switch. That's 8 million acres. I doubt you get maximum of 2 million acres more somewhere. We in North Dakota are going to switch a little. We've got a few clients in Iowa going to switch because it's too wet. Had it been dry enough, they'd have been all done. So I'm in DeKalb County now. I think all the corn that was intended to be planted was already planted here. So now you're going to rely on double crop. You're going to rely on the northern tier of states. Maybe North Dakota will plant another 500,000 acres. Minnesota, maybe some more up in the northern part. But you're planting acres now that are not 60 bushel beans. You got to use a 42 bushel yield, we'll say. If you get another 1 million acres, that's 42 million bushels more. You got a 200 million bushel crop problem, not a 40 million bushel crop problem. I don't think you're going to get enough beans switched over in the United States to make a big difference in the global situation. And this better be on the heels of a good crop this year. We better not have half of what our weather guys tell us we're going to have in August. Otherwise, like they say, Katie bar the door. I don't know how high is high enough. and our dollar is cheaper again today. So it becomes a matter of, when you lack supply, it becomes a matter of getting your hands on the physical commodity. And in protein, it's probably at any price. Just give me the meal and give me the beans. That's pretty far out there, but we are looking in 2017. That could be where we really have an interesting situation.
Now, quick note here, Michael Cordonnier will help us take a look at the South American, or part of that global condition, crop tomorrow on Commodity Week, when we record it Thursday at 3 in the afternoon, up on the website, willag.org, by 5 p.m. One of the things we'll talk about with him is the Safrinha corn crop under drought conditions in the heaviest growing areas in Mato Grosso and Goiás, a crop that really might make a difference. However, USDA, in this last WASD report, pointed towards a really big crop in the United States and a really low season average price. Would you agree with that?
No, I think a rising tide lifts all ships, and it's going to be, I think it's a matter of buying acres right now on beans. Maybe you don't affect corn because it's done too much. And we do have about 400 million bushels less than what a lot of people thought, 2.1 billion bushels. You really got to get the carryover down to 1.3 to 1.4 to get excited. But when does the end user cover it, knowing what he sees in 2017? You know, 350 corn for December of 2016 may look cheap come 2017. So we got to put a lot of this in perspective. And I think this crop is what's interesting is in the corn, they're expecting relatively good year. So if they're expecting soybean yield to be down, then they must, and corn to be up, maybe they're thinking that the La Nina comes in August and hurts the beans, but doesn't hurt the corn. But I think that's a crapshoot yet. And you really don't have you've got a demand situation that the government admitted to in soybeans. I think Cordier will tell you that the crop in South America will get less and less. And, you know, you and I have been there. I've seen it looking, you know, I got hurt with a crop of corn, and suddenly I got an inch of rain and the stuff grew 2 feet. And when I went to harvest it, the cobs weren't there. So we got to see some yield out of South America. But the good news is it didn't get bigger. And I think we gained back some market share in exports. I think the government is, you know, they handed us a gift yesterday. I don't think they're going to hand us another one until the end of June.
Thank you so much, Jerry.
Okay, thank you.
Jerry Gohlke is, of course, with the Gohlke Group out of Chicago, Illinois. You can hear him again, if you'd like, on our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. And tomorrow, don't forget that Commodity Week will be up there by about 5 o'clock on Thursday evening. We record at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Dr. Michael Cordonnier of Soybean and Corn Advisor will be our special guest. He'll help us walk through what that soybean and corn crop in South America looks like, especially because now we're mostly complete with harvest out of Argentina and in Brazil for the soybeans, and really have gone through the biggest part of what's happening with the corn crop in Brazil. It's gone all the way through tasseling at this time. So he'll be our guest. The other panelists include Mike Zuzlo, Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas, and Matt Bennett, who's with Channel Seeds and Bennett Consulting out of Windsor, Illinois. Coming up next, at least in a couple of minutes, we'll take a look at the weather forecast. Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City will be here with us on the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
It's National Mocha Tort Day. On this day in agricultural history, in 1838, Thomas Andrew Knight died, a British horticulturalist and botanist. He initiated the field of fruit breeding, and he studied the effects of pollen in the garden pea on seed characteristics. He also investigated controlled environmental culture, better known as greenhouses, as well as plant nutrition, fertilization, and pest control. In 1886, W. Marshall patented a grain binder. In 1934, a two-day Dust Bowl storm caused major ecological and agricultural damage to the American and Canadian prairies. The phenomenon was caused by severe drought, coupled with decades of extensive farming without crop rotation or other techniques to prevent erosion. In the 1930s, millions of acres of farmland became useless for planting. The Dust Bowl was centered on the panhandles of Texas and Oklahoma, as well as parts of New Mexico, Colorado, and Kansas. And in 1946, B.F. Goodrich announced the development of the tubeless tire. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers, helping farm families succeed for 100 years.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner joins us from Kansas City and World Weather Incorporated, as usual. Good afternoon to you, Drew.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about weather right here in the heart of the Midwest. In fact, across the whole of the Midwest, how are farmers doing putting the crop in the ground, and what are prospects for this week and next?
Well, you know, we're doing fairly well, certainly real well, in the western Corn Belt. The eastern portions of the region have become just a little bit too wet. And some would tell me, probably yelling at the PO already, telling me that it's way too wet. So we do have some problems out there in Indiana, Ohio, Michigan. There's a handful of other locations across the region that are too wet as well. And the forecast is not going to favor a reversal for a little while. One of the biggest concerns we have is that we've got still rain left over yet for today and early tomorrow across the Midwest. And we'll see a short-term drier day, but it looks like a little disturbance brings yet another set of showers on Friday into early Saturday, coming in from South Dakota right across the heart of the Midwest. This is all very light stuff, but it's not going to allow us to dry out at all. And once we do get into some more meaningful, drier air, it is cold. And so then we reduce the evaporation rates and keep some of that moisture in the ground. And then we wait for a warmer day to arrive. Well, when the warmer air comes, of course, then suddenly we bring warm air back into the cold air mass, and presto, we end up with more rain across the region. So there will be a nice period of drier weather that will come up over the weekend into the first half of next week. But right after that, it will rain again and fairly significantly across the region.
Are you worried about the rest of May in general?
Well, I think we'll see a better finish to the month, but we will have a lot of moisture that we'll have to get out of the way before we can get into the field. So a little bit concerned, yeah, perhaps. I think that for the eastern Midwest in particular, the west seems to get better warmth and a little better drying in between events than what we're seeing in the east. So, yeah, maybe a little bit of a concern here.
We've had some cold air on tap for the weekend. Is that still there, and is that problem?
Well, I think it is going to be of interest, at least. At the moment, it doesn't look like temperatures get quite cold enough, quite far enough to the south to really be an issue. Certainly, the wheat crop in the lower Midwest will be fine. Even in Michigan, I don't think there'll be any big issue there. Hard breadwinner wheat country will be left out of the cold completely. But from a summer crop perspective, with the crops that are emerging, there is going to be potential for burning some of the leaf mass. And the growing point for the corn crop, of course, is still going to be below surface level, so it will come back after being froze a little bit. I expect to see some upper 20s and 30s to occur across the northern plains, really a big part of the Dakotas and Minnesota as well as Wisconsin when we reach the bottom of this cold barrel, which will probably be over the weekend.
And then turn your attention to South America, where they have had some difficulties, especially with the Safrina corn crop.
It has been dry in the north, and I don't expect to see a lot of change in that pattern. Some of the southern production areas areas have actually been a little bit on the wet side, and they definitely need to dry out. The forecast is going to bring three more waves of very similar weather across Brazil for the next 2 weeks, so the southern areas will continue to have a wetter bias. This is Mato Grosso do Sul in the Paraná and parts of Sao Paulo. Everybody else is probably going to stay fairly dry.
And, of course, Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City.